Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. So turn up your Walkman, loosen that scrunchie, and get ready to talk 80s with your host, Lindsay Parker.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Parker from Yahoo Entertainment and Sirius XM Volume. Welcome to another episode of Totally 80s. Since we're all at home, why not take a second to follow us on Totally 80s on Facebook and Instagram, and email us your comments and show ideas to podcast@totally80s.com. You can also check us out on video if you'd like to see our lovely faces on our Totally 80s YouTube channel. So check that out if you're feeling like you're so inclined. And joining me today, as always, is my partner in all things 80s, John Hughes.
Lindsay, I am ready to laugh today. I'm ready.
Does anyone remember laughter? I do.
You know why?
Because we were just welcoming Jake Fogelnest onto the show on our last episode to talk about novelty songs in the 80s. And apparently this decade brought us so much hilarity that unsurprisingly, we ran long. So we had to go into episode 2 and bring this guy back. He is our special guest for a part two. Comedian, producer, radio personality, writer for television shows like Billy on the Street, Girl Boss, Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp, and a personal favorite, Difficult People. Also an experienced podcaster, which is why we went into extra innings with him. You may know him from his excellent podcast, The Fogelnest Files, which you should definitely check out. And of course, even from the pre-podcast days, you will remember from Squirt TV on MTV, a show that was very ahead of its time because it was started in his own bedroom when he was just 14 years old. So we're happy to welcome back to Totally 80s for more novelty talk, Jake Fogelnest. Welcome back.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's great to be here. If anyone out there has a dislike of me, I'm sorry that this turned into a two-parter. And for those of you who do like me, it's patreon.com/Jake Fogelnest.
We like you very much, Jake, which is why we decided to have you back, because we need some more comic relief. Let's get into a lot of comedians threw their hat in the novelty song ring in the 80s. A lot, some from the SNL world. There was Billy Crystal with You Look Marvelous.
Yes.
Jake, you're giving it prayer hands.
No, I have a lot to say about Billy Crystal's album, which this comes from.
He got an album too? Oh, well, but, yeah. was it like a normal comedy album that he would normally do? Was it like a Fernando album?
It's a stand-up album, but it starts with, it's bookended by song parodies. So you have You Look Marvelous at the end. Then you have a answering machine message from Fernando. But it starts with him and Christopher Guest doing the I Hate When That Happens guy. Yeah. And they did a little song to that. And then it's Billy Crystal stand up. But then he does on the album, he refers to it. I want to do this last piece. He refers to this comedy routine as a piece because it's very serious to him. You know, Billy Crystal grew up. His father was a record producer and produced a lot of jazz records and put out a lot of jazz music. So Billy Crystal grew up around all these great jazz musicians. And then he does sort of this piece from his childhood. And Tom Sharpling came up with the term for it, but he puts on what's essentially audio blackface and does this routine of like him as an old jazz man character. And he did it again for comic relief when they did it for Hurricane Katrina. And it's just like, I know that Billy Crystal's intentions are coming from the best place. I know that he, you know, truly grew up in this world, but at the same time, it is just tone deaf. And it's, you know, Billy Crystal, it's very hard. Because there's some Billy Crystal that I absolutely love. He's amazing in When Harry Met Sally. But there's also the Billy Crystal who has absolutely no sense of humor about himself. And like,
seriously.
It's not funny.
Someone from the SNL world that I would put in the same category, and in the sense that what you just said applies. Who did a song that I would call a novelty song, and also someone who some of his material is definitely not aged well, is Eddie Murphy. Because would you consider not Party All the Time? That was like a legit jam.
No, that's
it. Boogie in Your Butt. Is Boogie in Your Butt a novelty song?
Yeah. It's nonsense. It's a nonsense novelty song tagged on to the end of his stand-up album. One of the greatest things that I am most proud of writing for Billy on the Street is Mark Twain quote or Eddie Murphy's stand-up routine, and which is a game that we played, and there, I think Billy on the Street's now on Netflix, and it airs. And look, I love Eddie Murphy, and I think Eddie Murphy has reflected upon that material, and he has apologized for that material, and he was wonderful in Dolomite Is My Name. But you know, Eddie Murphy at 20 years old said a lot of really ignorant, stupid, hateful stuff. And the world laughed with it. And Eddie Murphy today looks back on that and cringes, as he should. It should be highlighted. You know, there are also huge sections of Eddie Murphy's Delirious that are absolutely brilliant and hysterical. But, you know, he was 20 years old.
Boogie in Your Butt holds up.
It's pretty funny.
Boogie in Your Butt, I'll listen to that now in 2020. I think it's kind of ironic that he had some, you know, quite frankly, super homophobic stuff in his stand-up routines. In fact, the album that Boogie in Your Butt is in, I believe, opens with a track that the word I'm not going to say. He had a song about putting things in your Boogie in Your Butt. Like, it's very strange.
To me, Boogie in Your Butt reads not as homophobic as track one on that album.
More
a celebration of the many things that you can put in your butt while dancing around. You know what I mean?
Quite a long list.
As the gay guy here on this podcast, I have to admit, I owned both those records and I laughed my ass off throughout. Right.
At the time, you know.
I look back now and I'm like, oh, Eddie, but I bought it. I thought it was funny. I had a sense of humor about it.
I laughed too, you know, and I think it's important to admit that we laughed at the time. And I also think it's important for us to go, comedy evolves.
Yeah, you can.
And also it's important to like note that Eddie Murphy has been acknowledging this and actually contributing to AIDS organizations since forever.
Yep.
And me not wanting to contribute to cancel culture and me wanting to have the room to walk the line. Like, yeah, we look back at that. We laughed at the time. We learn. And I think we get smarter and better with age. And Eddie Murphy is a 20-year-old kid. When he was saying all that stuff.
There's another comedian I want to talk about who had a great novelty song that unfortunately, she didn't mean to be offensive at the time. It was just a different time. Unfortunately, this song is aged really badly and I believe she no longer performs it. But Julie Brown, not the Wubba Wubba Downtown Julie Brown, but the other Julie Brown.
Just say Julie Brown.
She had a song that was sort of a parody of those like teen death songs of the 50s and early 60s. And it was called The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun. And at the time I thought it was hilarious. It is a song about a teenager. I love Julie Brown. I loved her in Earth Girls Are Easy with Cause I'm a Blah. I love her. I loved her show on MTV when she albumed. But the song that she is best known for was The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun, which was a sort of like teen angel, like horror story, 1960s parody of a teenager who shoots up a prom. It was comedy in 1980, whatever, because it was a scenario that at that time seemed very far-fetched and ludicrous and would not happen. So it could be played for laughs about, like, it had like this Citizen Kane, like, ending, like, why'd you do it? I did it for Johnny. And now, yeah, they, and Jake is holding it up. Wow. That
Rhino Records.
This is a Rhino Records white label promo of the Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun. But yeah, you're right. It does not play
well now at all. There's no way that song could be comedy now in the last, like, since Columbine, basically.
Right. And Julie, like, when I first moved to Los Angeles and I started my podcast, The Fogelness Files, I had a couple people on. And literally, when I moved to LA, I said, I really want to meet Julie Brown. I think she's incredible. I've been a huge fan since I was a kid. She was the first person that, when I was doing the Fogelness Files, like, I had a couple people on just to establish credibility. She's the first person that I reached out to say, will you please come do my podcast? And she said, yes. And then I was like, would you like to do monologues at UCB? She brought her son. I love Julie Brown. I want to put her in more things. I think she is this incredible talent. And, you know, Just Say Julie on MTV was so funny. The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun is just one of the many, many brilliant Julie Brown songs
want to point out that no one was offended by it at the time.
No,
there was no offense. It was not a distasteful song for the time, because it was a scenario that we did not hear about on the news all the time. The idea that some vengeful teen would do this, and, you know, it was a funny song. I took no offense to it, but now when you listen to it, it's like, oh, holy cow, can you imagine if this song came out now? Because, you know, quite sadly, the world has changed a lot. And yeah, it definitely plays a lot differently now.
There is one part that I will always crack me up no matter what. And that is when I lean down and whisper to Debbie, in her good ear.
Actually, you know what's funny is I saw the video and heard the song for The Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun before I saw Citizen Kane. So thanks, Julie Brown, for ruining Citizen Kane for me, because I knew from the beginning when, you know, he goes Rosebud, I'm like, oh, it's a sled. Because of this song, I was not surprised at the end of Citizen Kane because of Julie Brown. But, you know, she didn't mean any harm by this song in multiple ways. She meant no ill will.
You got to give a shout out to A Girl Fight Tonight, too, because that's
a song. Trapped in the body of a white girl, you know, which again, you could say, oh, is that okay? Yeah, it is. And it's like Julie Brown, I couldn't love her more. And
yeah, she's awesome.
And you can get, I think, direct from her website, you know, Just Say Julie, her MTV show, which I just...
Look, a model's brain.
It was so formative. She was so formative to what I thought was funny. And I went back with her on it's behind the Stitcher premium paywall. But, like, you know, I found her first appearance on Laverne and Shirley. I am the biggest Julie Brown fan. I saw Laverne, her Girls and Easy in the theater.
I did too.
Laverne's new roommate when Shirley leaves is Julie
Brown. Is that true?
She did she said she did two episodes as two different characters. And Julie Brown is one of those artists where I'm like, yes, I have it all. I have every, if it's a promo copy, if it's a 12 inch, if it's a 7 inch, if it's a cassette, for the Valley Relics Museum, I am ready at any moment to loan out the Julie Brown collection.
Because Girl Fight Tonight has a phrase that is really just gut-wrenchingly funny and actually kind of really poetic and really artistic, and that is, Girl Fight Tonight, blood and mascara will run.
That's quite goth, actually.
Right? The other thing that's so interesting about Julie Brown's album, speaking to, you know, what you were saying about it being an album-driven industry, first of all, signed to Sire Records, and, you know, they have a couple of songs on the Trapped in a Body of a White Girl album that are just kind of straightforward pop songs, because they were simultaneously seeing that they could try to break her as a kind of like a Madonna, even though she was parodying Madonna. They were, you know,
kind of almost what happened with Tracy Ullman, who was a comedian, but had real, like, covered Kirstie McCall and had, like, you know, real songs. Interesting. I didn't know that, actually. I got to go find that. I know you have it, but I'm not prepared. I don't have my Julie Brown album.
It's just a weird area where I am a completist. And
she's great. I will go to the Valley Relics Museum. But there's a couple other comedians I want to talk about who did songs that I would consider novelty songs, one of which is a timeless classic, but one of which, even though I found them really funny at the time, the video, at least, does not age well. And that is... you know, rest in peace, Sam Kinison, but the Wild Thing video, he covered the Trogs Wild Thing. And, you know, obviously with some different lyrics where he's like, why didn't you tell me you were a demon from hell? And it has Jessica Hahn in her, like, rebellious phase, you know, sexy phase. And it basically shows her, like, just kind of like putting on a sort of like strip-teasy type of, like, you know, girls, 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 Motley Crue style show. And there's all of these. Actually, Rodney Dangerfield's in the video, but there's like a whole bunch of other, like, you know, hair metal people from the time, like members of Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses and Poison and Bon Jovi and Rats and Billy Idol and Motley Crue, actually. And they're all kind of like yelling and screaming at Jessica Hahn and like ogling her. And like, I completely remember thinking this video was funny and thinking Sam Kinison was funny. I still think Sam Kinison's stand-up is funny a lot of the time. I think he was a great comedian. But, you know, him, again, everyone was getting green lit because, yeah, I don't know how I feel about Wild Thing by Sam Kinison now.
I remember really respecting the amount of restraint used in that video, because they actually did not hose her down at any point. So,
they go run up on Warren then on Cherry Pie.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously, you know, Sam was a rock and roll comedian. You know, I think probably... the likes of which we had never seen before. And I think that, you know, working in comedy and working in music, there's this bizarre thing where all rock stars want to be comedians and all comedians want to be rock stars. It melds very well together. You know what I mean? Even going to like the Foo Fighters and some of their early music videos and stuff like, but Sam,
Tenacious D is a perfect example.
Tenacious D is the ultimate example. And you know, I just think that I would have loved to have seen Sam Kinison at 1 o'clock in the morning at the Comedy Store. And then I would have liked to gone home. I'm very glad that, you know, I was not part of Sam Kinison's entourage. I'm glad, you know what I mean? I know Andrew Dice Clay and Sam Kinison were very contentious. It's very interesting that that Dice never made a novelty song. He didn't, you know, even though he did Ford Fairlane, which I think is actually a great movie.
He was in A Star Is Born last year in a musical film, but in a non-musical role.
And he's incredible. Because what I think is the Dice character, there's Andrew Clay Silverstein, the actor. And then there is the Dice Man, which is this character he created, who was, you know, like if you go back to old episodes of Different Strokes, he was Andrew Clay, you know. Then mm-hmm. the Dice Man, and then it gets mixed, you know, it gets mixed up as the fame kind of happened. The Andrew Clay Silverstein became sort of Dice, and now I think it's sort of balanced out. And
what about with Sam Kinison, though? Was that him in real life?
I think, unfortunately, we'll never know. You know, I think that Sam Kinison, you know, not to bring the show down, was in a good period. And then ironically was killed by a drunk driver. And, you know, he came from a religious background, and I don't know how Sam Kinison would have evolved and what side of the, debate, he would be on, you know. I don't know. But you know, for his time, his voice was valid. It was a massive hit. It was a MTV staple. Mm-hmm. It was, do I think it sent the wrong message to a lot of young boys? Yeah, absolutely. You know, But not every young boy for its time. I think it's important in the history of pop culture and comedy, and a good song for Sam Kinison to do as a rock and roll comedian. It's the ultimate rock and roll song. And then if you want to look for something really funny, listen to the Trogs tapes, the recording.
Well, on the subject of rock and roll comedians, something that's come up on the show before, the best rock and roll comedy show, in my opinion, ever was The Young Ones.
I agree.
And even though it was not a hit here, Neil from The Young Ones, Nigel Planer, he had a number two song. Maybe he got cock-blocked by Joel Dolce too, I don't know. But a number two song on the UK charts, of course, with a cover of a Traffic song called Hole in My Shoe. He was on Top of the Pops and all that. And this one, like I said, this is the classic that holds up. Nothing problematic about this one. I love everything that is related to The Young Ones. But the fact that he had a number two song in the UK shows you how big that show was over there.
And it, you know, it got MTV kind of jumped on that too. They would play that Top of the Pops performance on MTV, and they sold the album by mail order on MTV.
Really?
Yeah, there were direct mail commercials for it. The thing that blew my mind, and I did not realize this, sadly, until about 15 years ago, I had no idea that song was a cover. I thought it was Neil being funny, psychedelic. I thought it was written for him because the lyrics are so spot on for that character. I'm like, nobody could ever really write this song seriously. And then I find out it's a Traffic song.
Wait, so there was an album, a whole Neil album?
Oh, yeah. It's the Experience. Is that what it's called, Jake?
I forget the exact name, but yes, there's a Neil album. And then, of course, The Young Ones did a cover of Living Doll with Cliff Richard. Yeah. And just the relationship. First of all, Lindsay, I couldn't agree with you more just in terms of rock and roll comedy. The Young Ones is the gold standard and so informative to myself and everybody else that I know in comedy. We just have such an appreciation for The Young Ones. And you know, the 12 that they did and the relationship that The Young Ones had with music of just like, okay, music and then Motorhead's in their living
room. And the Damned.
Sexies. Music, the Madness. Musical guest in the middle of a sitcom is not something that's ever been done to my knowledge since. And I don't know if you could, and The Young Ones is just, for anyone that hasn't watched The Young Ones, like, please do.
Do it now.
You have such a gift waiting for you. You know, if you're listening to this, you're going to love The Young Ones. Yeah. It's just so funny. I don't think a year goes by where I don't, you know, pull out an episode of it. And I within the last 6 months, I had to watch the Nosing Around segment, you know. It's a rock and roll comedy show, and they had two novelty songs attached to the show. I love Neil's thing. That's hilarious. You didn't know it was a Traffic cover.
I'm remembering all this stuff now. It's called Neil's Heavy Concept Album.
Yes, Neil's Heavy Concept Album.
Hello. Oh, there you are. What are you doing under the table? Oh, never mind. Listen, I want to tell you about my groovy new album, right? It's called Neil's Heavy Concept Album, and it's really beautiful. It's got a great song in it, right, called Hole in My Shoe. Look, look, look.
And all that I knew was the hole in my shoe, which was letting it more down.
Remember me? I'm Neil from The Young Ones, right? And the main thing about this album is, like, you can only get it from MTV, right? Because they were the only people together enough.
British comedy gets heavy with Neil's Heavy Concept Album. 20 songs, Neil originals and new versions of smashes from the 60s. Send check or money order for $8.98 plus $150 postage and handling to Neil.
It is on streaming services if you want to check it out.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like such a British phenomenon, but I think if there was any novelty song of the 80s that was more of a British phenomenon than Neil from The Young Ones having a number two hit in the UK with a Traffic cover, it's Doctor and the TARDIS, which when we talk about things that we didn't know, was done by a group called the Time Lords, which I did not know until years later was actually the friggin' KLF.
Yeah.
KLF did that song. For those who don't know what that was, this was like this bizarre mashup of like a sweet song, I believe it was Blockbuster, the now problematic Gary Glitter song Rock and Roll, and the Doctor Who theme song. And it somehow worked really super well. It wasn't even almost a novelty. It was like on K-Rock out here.
I was just going to say, as a Whovian, I don't think find that a novelty song whatsoever. So you need to stop that.
I don't know.
That was legit dance track for me. And it packed dance floors in clubs in the late 80s. That was a go-to track for DJs.
How British is that?
The KLF are so interesting to me. And also, I will say, Gary Glitter is the worst human being on the planet, but boy, are some of those songs fun. And you can always just listen to the Glitter Band. That's without Gary Glitter. Right. You know, there's always the Glitter Band stuff we can listen to. But, it reminds me, and I don't know if it's sort of the opposite of a novelty song, but it reminds me of Paul Hardcastle's 19.
Yeah. Do you know fun fact about that related?
Okay. No, tell me, please.
Real quick. Simon Fuller, mm-hmm. who created American Idol, created the Spice Girls, and has a hugely successful company called 19 Entertainment. It's named after that because the first thing he did in the music business was manage Paul Hardcastle, and that was his first hit. And he named his company 19 Entertainment after that hit. So there's a tie from that song, which is about casualties in the Vietnam War, to American Idol and the Spice Girls. Who knew? I knew. But most people don't know.
That's amazing. And also, I will say, Spice World, the Spice Girls movie, is worth a revisit.
Hell yeah, it is.
It's hilarious. I saw it opening night. It is a movie that does not take itself too seriously. It was a lot of fun then, and it's a lot of fun still. And, it has jokes in it. Meatloaf as their bus driver,
has
saying,
Elton John in it, has Elton Costello in it. But yes. I do want to, going back to the 80s for a second, I do want to say, since we're talking about 19 Entertainment and American Idol, Simon Cowell also had some auspicious novelty song beginnings. I wouldn't call 19 by Paul Hardcastle.
No, it's not a novelty. It's the opposite. Yeah.
But I would call Wonder Dog's Rough Mix a song with barking dogs that I believe predated the Jingle Cats and Jingle Dogs, in which Simon Cowell went on children's TV in a dog suit. You can find this on YouTube. And it's funny because when they're interviewing him, he's totally talking in the Simon Cowell voice. He's like, well, yes, the reason I decided to do this is, he's totally serious in Simon Cowell, but then he performs a song in a dog suit called Ruff, R-U-F-F Mix. And that was Simon Cowell's beginning in music, is self-marketing like a novelty song about a singing dog. So, it's all tied together in some way.
Amazing. Yeah. No, a good novelty song will do you well. It's like more 70s, but Casablanca Records, created their offshoot Millennium Records based off of Mecco's, Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk, which is just simply the Star Wars theme to a disco beat and a total cash in. But, they sold millions of them.
There's the history of record labels subsidizing the Joni Mitchells with the novelty tracks. I mean, mm-hmm.
Sometimes the novelty tracks outsell them. I have a couple questions about a couple of songs that we were talking about glam rock. So do you consider Hot, Hot, Hot by Buster Poindexter, aka David Johansen of the New York Dolls? Is that a novelty song? Because, that song was huge and definitely more successful in terms of sales and charting than anything the New York Dolls ever did in the U.S. But
I think it was a lot of people, most people's introduction to David Johansen. And mm-hmm. I think most people of the world probably know Buster Poindexter and don't know David Johansen. And yeah, that's all very confusing to me. Buster Poindexter, I mean, he was on Saturday Night Live and did it. And, I just put that in a category of Bruce Willis and the Return of Bruno, where it's just that happened. We just let it happen. It was Bruce Willis was charming on Moonlighting, and then he did some wine cooler commercials. And next thing you know, he's doing an earnest cover of Respect Yourself. And we just said, okay, this is happening. Same thing with Buster Poindexter. I think, David Johansen, if anyone deserved to get paid and have a hit, it was David Johansen. And this Buster Poindexter character, it was just him having fun. It doesn't detract from anything that he did.
Of course.
With the New York Dolls, it was just I'm doing this now. you know, it was fun.
I also want to ask, since we're talking about Britishness and also about like kind of novelty rapping, where do you guys stand on Watt by Captain Sensible? And for that matter, the Dee Dee Ramone rapping stuff, since we're talking about like punks who started to rap, are those novelty songs?
Well, you know, Dee Dee Ramone's rap album was truly done with such earnestness from Dee Dee Ramone. You know, that was at a time where I think he was particularly frustrated in the Ramones, and he was listening to a lot of hip hop, and he understood it, and he related to it. He was like, oh, I get what this is about. And he was really trying his best to do hip hop, and it just kind of sounds like, you know, and he sort of admits, you know, like, I tried. And, you know, it was very earnest. It was very earnest coming from Dee Dee. And I think it really bothered Johnny. And just you, that gets into the whole history of the Ramones. Mm-hmm. Unintentionally funny, I think, to Dee Dee Ramone. I think to all of us, it was just sort of like, you know, like, I'm glad it happened. I feel bad that Dee Dee kind of didn't get the artistic endeavor that maybe he wanted, but like, not the guy who's capable of pulling off hip hop. But I appreciate the effort.
I don't know what it means, but Rhino put it out on vinyl 2 years ago for Record Store Day, and it's sold out.
It sold out.
One of them to me, my dear friend Jocelyn bought me that as a gift, and she just knew I don't have the original, and I'm very happy to have the Rhino Record Store Day repress. And
it's good to be prepared. It's good to be prepared. I will say though that Captain Sensible's rappy song Watt, W-O-T, I think, I don't know if he was trying to be serious. I think he was trying to be funny, but I think he pulled that one off. That song is a banger. That song's a banger.
Captain Sensible can do whatever the hell he wants. You know what I mean? He's Captain Sensible, man.
We were talking about novelty songs paying the rent, more or less. We got to talk about Frank Zappa and Moon Youth.
Well, I was just literally about to say that. I was literally, before I said, sorry, John, I was about to say, so since we're sort of wrapping things up with people who actually are credible, who were like, real musicians who came from real bands and had a large body of work. Yes, I teased it a couple of times during the show. Frank Zappa, as legit as it gets, you know, certainly if you're at a level where you're getting your not even a specific song of yours, but your style is getting parodied by Weird Al, then, you know, you are a real credible artist. But for a lot of people who are, you know, not super huge music dorks, they probably only know him from Valley Girl. And I believe that did not sit well with him, or, you know, that song, this song was a double-edged sword for him because it did pay his rent. It was a huge hit. It was a top, it was his only top 40 hit, but, you know, did it really represent what he was about? No.
You know, it's very interesting because, like, you know, I love the story behind this song. I love that he, you know, pulled Moon into the studio and, you know, to do it. And, you know, yeah, it was a double-edged sword. At the same time, like, I do have a 12-inch of them, re-releasing it, like, later on in life, like, with a more updated photo of Moon as she was older. Like, they, you know, re-released it in 1989 or something. So, you know, yeah, but here's the thing. Frank Zappa... And I'm very much looking forward to Alex Winter's documentary, and I will watch any Zappa documentary. I think I'm more interested in Frank Zappa, the person, than I am most of the music. And I think that's what Frank Zappa's problem with his life was like, he had a lot of contempt for his fans. And
apparently he had a lot of contempt for the Valley, because I grew up in the Valley, and I specifically remember being a very little kid, my mom picking me up from school, it was her day to carpool, Kiss FM or KIQQ, one of the top 40 radio stations was on, and they were playing Valley Girl, and she was laughing her ass off, and she was like, this song is hilarious, it's about where we live, I don't even think I had a concept of I live in quote unquote the Valley or the San Fernando Valley. She's like, it's about where we live. And even at that grade school age, I listened to it. I'm like, this song ain't flattering. Like, this song is making fun of where we live. And I actually didn't know anyone who actually talked like that. Of course, there were references to things like the Galleria and stuff that I knew. But I was like, I don't know anyone who talks like this. But, you know, he definitely, if he had contempt for his fans, but definitely this was, you know, it's funny to me that Valley Girl became this thing that spawned a movie. It spawned a fashion craze. It spawned like a whole like pop culture interest in the Galleria. And there was like the Valley Girl handbook with like, you know, the dictionary of how to talk like this way that I never heard anyone say gag me with a spoon ever at all. We said like and awesome and rad, but I think everyone in the 80s in California especially did. But like, you know, it's interesting.
Lindsay, that I think you might have hung with a smarter crowd. You know what I mean? Well,
it's just like, interesting. I say like all the time. It's actually been brought up to me that I say it a lot, and it's something I can't untrain myself to do because I grew up. I don't know if that's even a Valley thing.
I don't think that's a Valley thing. I think that's just you're just as broadcasters, we notice this thing. And
yeah. So like as I was like, but
I think Moon Unit did encounter these people, you know.
And I mean, it was based on truth, but it's to the extreme. But my point is, it spawned this whole pop culture phenomenon that was a hugely successful movie that even just got remade and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, it was not, I just said like again, it was not a song that was meant to really celebrate the Valley and the people of the Valley. It was making fun of them for being shallow and materialistic and airheaded. Yeah. And yet it became, so I don't know how Frank, if you're talking about him having contempt for his audience, felt about the fact that it became this Valley, you know, thing, you know.
I appreciate that song for a few reasons, but mostly for giving me the phrase, Lord God King Bufu. That was the show. And I love the most earnest, cutest performance by Moon Unit on Solid Gold lip syncing this. It's
so great. Yeah.
She's got like star quality at the age of 13, just kind of like, you know, casually tossing by these bon mons while the Solid Gold dancers are writhing around her, Jo Valley Girl. It's the cutest thing ever. And I can see why she eventually got a sitcom on CBS. She's got
I just love Moon. Yeah, she had a sitcom for a minute, and you know, and then and with Dweezil, and then Dweezil also released, you know, a song not nearly as successful as Valley Girl, but on his dad's label, you know, Dweezil being very into metal, but they did a song called My Mom is a Space Cadet.
Didn't Eddie Van Halen produce that?
I think so.
Work on it in some way?
Yeah, it's not in some capacity. I certainly think that Eddie Van Halen gave Dweezil some guitar lessons or something. But like, you know, he was so into metal, and My Mom is a Space Cadet is, what do you call that? You know, like Frank Zappa's songs, you know, going back to, you know, the Mothers of Invention, you know, have inherent humor to them. They're, you know, so Valley Girl being the big hit, I think there was other humorous things that he was trying to say in his music. And I think that also, you know, by the time we get to the end of Frank Zappa's life, it was like, I don't need musicians. I can make a symphony with a synclavier, you know, with a computer. And like, he's a very interesting man. I will be endlessly interested in his story. He was a great wit and a great interview subject, and possibly a terrible human being. But also possibly a wonderful human being. I don't know.
Jake, we're running out of time. So I just want to say you're a great wit and a great interview subject and a wonderful human being. And I feel this is a good time to sort of cap it off, because I think I would argue, and as the co-host of Totally 80s, I feel I'm somewhat of an authority on this. The two greatest novelty songs of the 80s were Pac-Man Fever and Valley Girl. So I feel it's great that we kind of book. Do you agree, John, as the other co-host, is the other John Hughes?
I'm gonna vacillate a little bit on Pac-Man Fever, but I do want to make sure, as the that dude on Totally 80s that always does this crap, I want to give a quick shout out to Blotto for being early MTV novelty hit.
I want to be a lifeguard.
Yeah.
So, and I want to be a cowboy. People wanted to be a lot of things in the 80s, apparently.
But Blotto, I'm going to pour 40 for you later tonight.
So Jake, I'll actually, since we both threw in our suggestions, what do you think is the greatest novelty hit of the entire decade?
Novelty hit, the greatest novelty hit of the decade, it's very hard for me to pick a favorite. I will give it to the King, Weird Al, just because I'm just going to give it to Weird Al because he really is the person that is so closely associated with the 80s and with novelty music, and has continued to do it the best of anyone. I think even the Lonely Island, who, in my opinion, are three gentlemen who have yet to make a mistake with their novelty music, and are spot on. They will give it up to Weird Al. And even though Weird Al never got permission to do a Prince parody, he was at the premiere of Purple Rain. So, if you get invited to the premiere of Purple Rain because you sang Eat It, you win the 80s.
You're the GOAT. You're the GOAT.
You're the greatest of all time. And it's just so much fun to do this with you because we could talk for hours.
We could, but we do need to wrap this up.
It was a wonderful for people.
We'll have you back on because this was a great two-part episode, and your knowledge of the between the three of us, I think our knowledge is a great trifecta. But before I let you go, Jake, is there anything that you want to talk about that you're working on that you can let our fans know?
I started a Patreon. I couldn't be busier, so I decided, let me make myself busier. But patreon.com/JakeFogelNest, that is where you can actually see old episodes of my public access show, Squirt TV, some as they were originally broadcast. There's all different tiers. I'm also making new podcasts, and I just said, F it. I have been seeing everybody else doing shows from their house. I did it first. I did this first. And for $5 a month, you can get a show from me, a TV show called I Did This First. You get to see a little bit of the old stuff. You get to see me now. $10, you get a podcast. You get everything. I've done everything. I made an hour comedy special with Steve Agee. There's just a ton of fun stuff on my Patreon. And it's patreon.com/JakeFogelNest. And I'm making things in my house right now because I can. I've got a microphone. I've got lots of microphones. I've got cameras. And I can't go out. And I've been so focused on, writing for television and I've got some Emmy nominations now. I haven't had a show in 6 years, since I was 15 years old. This is the longest period of time where I haven't had some sort of show, whether it was being on Sirius XM or the MTV show or the podcast. So I just said, screw this, and started a Patreon. And it's a lot of fun. And
it sounds like fun. And $5 a month is a bargain. So yeah. Everybody definitely check that out. Thank you, Jake, for joining us from your house and having a safe and socially distanced journey back to the novelty songs of the 80s. I think these are the kind of songs we could all use right now in these dark times. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Special thanks to you, Jake. I'm Lindsay Parker, and I've been joined today by my partner in all things 80s, the other John Hughes. We want to thank everyone for listening. Remember to give us a rate and review on your favorite podcast platform, and we will catch you next time.
This was Totally 80s. The podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Totally 80s, and please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Until our next episode, catch you on the flip side.